This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 473, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I don't know where I'm going, but I sure know where I've been. Hanging on the promises and songs of yesterday, and I've made up my mind.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 473. I am Josh Flanagan, and with me is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
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 We are iFanboy. We like comic books.
We do.
Oh, every week we read a bunch of them. I thought it was enough to just say we like comics. We read a bunch of them. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the Pick of the Week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books from the week, some other things. And then we'll do some questions, whatever. We're going to have fun. It'll be a good time as you've become accustomed. Hopefully more so.
I would hope.
Yeah. Here's your spoiler warning. That was it. There might be some spoilers. So, you know, we're all adults here. That's not necessarily true, but that's how I like to think of it, because otherwise it's too difficult. Connor, you had the pick.
This was difficult. This was one of those weeks where I had a ton of books. I haven't had one of those weeks in a while, and back when we were doing this full time, that was much easier to deal with. But I had like 19 books this week, which was crazy.
I had 18.
And I had a bunch of really good ones. So it was tough, but I read Lazarus 15 fairly early on in the process and thought, okay, that's going to be really hard to beat. And it turned out it was. So Lazarus 15 was the pick of the week. Greg Rucka, Michael Lark. We've talked a lot about this book. Josh has made his threats. We'll probably get back to that. But
guarantee it.
This was an issue where mostly silent, because it was mostly a fairly bloody fight scene between Forever, the Lazarus of the Carlyle family, and was it Sophia, her name was, or something like that? Sonia. It was Sonia. Nope. Yeah, Sonia. Okay, it was Sonia, who was fighting for the other side. So basically, We have is the conclave of families. This is the future world where a bunch of rich families control the earth, and they've had a conclave because the Carlyle family, who we've been following, is in conflict with the Hawk family, who has stolen or kidnapped one of Carlyle's sons, Jacob. Oh no, that's Hawk. The names are hard to remember.
It doesn't matter. Move along.
The point is, they've been having a dispute, and they've decided to go with the age old dispute reconciliation manner of fighting.
Sorry, can I interrupt you about this real quick?
Yes.
I'm looking through the fight right now, and the middle page section mm-hmm. has let go from the staple on my copy of Lazarus.
Mine too. Mine as well.
Who can we talk to about this?
I'm sure there's someone.
All right.
But Trial by Combat, let's talk about that for a second.
Well, yeah.
When did we decide that
you know, we'll put evidence aside, we'll put witnesses aside, and we'll just decide who is right or who is wrong by who is stronger. And well, I guess everyone, that's always been the way of the world.
It's a ridiculous notion. I think it's a ridiculous notion when it happens in Game of Thrones, which is overall ridiculous. And the fact that it happens here is kind of interesting because this book, I've always considered, you know, it's a future book. It's what will happen. But I think he's reminding us that this is just a return to feudalism, really.
Absolutely, 100%.
And so that's why this can happen.
I like the tropes of the old days being inserted into the future because that's what it is. It's a return to powerful families controlling everyone. And so why not return to those customs of trial by combat? So here you've got...
Because they're dumb.
Right. And but here you've got a masterclass from Michael Lark and the rest of the art team, which I'm going to give credit to because that's primarily why it's the pick. So Tyler Boss, our artist assist, Santi Arcas and Colors. Just a masterclass in silent storytelling, in telling a story through only pictures, a story that's logical. If you can follow the fight all the way through, it was really just a beautiful sequence, this fight scene.
It was. I will tell you, I went back and I made sure to read it a lot. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, I used to get through something like this and I just sort of breeze through it. But now I really try to pay attention to the moves, to the choreography, to how it works, you know, how the sort of battle progresses and things like that. And I was slightly lost about, there's a bit at the end where Sonya basically says something like, oh, your sword was too light. Because they had switched swords.
Right.
And I went back to try to find that visually. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I could. That was my, if I had any complaint, like I was like, I guess, and so I was trying to decide, did they say that because it wasn't entirely clear?
It's when Forever got her arm broken. Mm-hmm. They were holding each other's hilts in each hand. And Forever's arm gets broken, and you can see them switch hands. It's a subtle thing, but they
no, that's when
swords.
She took it, and then after that they've switched swords because Forever has that sort of shorter serrated edge one.
Mm-hmm.
They've switched swords, and then they get locked again a couple of pages later, and I think that's when she loses it.
No, that's the arm breaking scene because there's a close up actually of Sonya holding, hitting this her sword against Forever's, and you can see her sword now has the serrated edge to it.
Right. No, that's when they switch. But the point is that after she switches, then she has Forever's sword, which is lighter. So mm-hmm. after that is when she had a problem.
Yes.
So it's not really even a criticism. It was just a thing that they said. So I went back to see how they could illustrate it. I sort of see where the moment is. But I don't mind that. Like he said, Rucka said something in the end. Like I had built the story to this point so that we had time to just let Lark go.
Yep.
Which is rad. We just don't get to do that nearly enough, and it's always sort of a treat when they do. I find myself, I mean, like if you keep going on in this comic book world, do you find yourself just silent issues? They're just like the greatest thing.
Well, I've always loved them.
Going
back to G.I. Joe 21, but. They are great, especially when they are done at this skill level. And I know in the past, when we used to have the website discussions, people would complain because they felt like they would read this issue in 2 minutes and be over. But that's really the wrong way to read a comic, and I hate to say it like that, but it is.
It is. I agree.
You
I've been guilty of that. You know, like somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of this, I mean, that's what comic book storytelling is. It's about that much more than the words. So therefore. That is inherently a wrong statement.
But this is brutal. And then, surprising no one, Hawk is a bad loser.
I really liked the end bit, too. I felt like we didn't just end up on the sort of tragedy of the fight. But I guess there wasn't much tragedy because she wasn't killed. But then, you know, the sort of double cross and the spit in his face.
Spit poison in his face.
You thought he was going to kill himself.
Yes.
But not the case.
So if indeed... The patriarch of the Carlyle family dies here, which it seems like he is. Then again, they are medical geniuses. Then that'll throw this whole thing in disarray, which will be really interesting.
Who takes over?
Right, exactly. That's the sort of brilliance of Rucka's story here is that we've got this set world. We're 15 issues into it. And then the most powerful man in it, if he's dead, that's going to cause an even more chaos, which is going to be great.
Yeah.
The world that he's built here is so wonderful.
I can't. When you just said 15 issues, I was like, "That's it."
Yeah, it's only been 15.
And every issue to me feels short. Like I'm like, I wish that was longer. Not, you know, that's because there's not that much they can fit. But that's really interesting.
In a good way.
I just love the dirty inks that he does, like in his choreography throughout this whole thing. I just love it.
If you're at a comic store and you're not reading this book, just pick it up and flip through it and check out the fight scene, and then maybe this will entice you to pick up the series. But at the very least, just check it out for the artistry and it's the pure storytelling skill in this sequence. It's most of the book. It's probably half the book,
yeah,
or more. And it's just beautiful. Once I realized what was happening, I was like, oh, all right, let's do this.
Buckle up.
Yeah, so good. I mean, you make the joke every time that you'll start putting people against the wall if this book ends. I don't want to say canceled because the creators end the books at Image. But I know what you're saying.
I'm not going to hold them responsible. I'm not going to hold the publisher responsible. I'm going to hold you responsible.
I'm just saying you're starting to act like one of these families, though.
There's right and there's right. You know, and who's the arbiter of that? Well, me.
And who better, really?
Exactly.
Who better to arbitrate?
Like I can trust anyone else?
No.
Bunch of Jim Oakes.
Lunatics. So Lazarus 15, not a ton to say about it simply because it was mostly about this just amazingly realized scene in the middle. But this book continues to be one of my favorites. I'm always excited when it comes out. It doesn't come out quite regularly as you'd like it, but it's not as bad as, say, Jupiter's Legacy or one of those books.
I don't think it's that bad.
No.
But, you know.
But it's great.
Yeah,
now,
I see it.
Real close second was MPH number 5.
Really? So you weren't so into this.
I wasn't sure with the first issue, but I've stuck with it and really enjoyed it. My real first question is, who is this Mark Miller that's writing these heartwarming stories?
He's been around for a while. The twist in this book, and by the way, this doesn't work in a movie in quite the same way. You should be right. Like, oh, that's that guy.
Right.
But it worked in this. The twist in this book was just wonderful. The way that they revealed, you know, the expert, you know, that they took out of jail and brought him in, and the whole story, and then the other part of the story, like I had forgotten about the guy who had been sent back to
It's only been 5 issues. This is the 5th and final issue. So between MPH and Starlight, you've got two limited series from Mark Miller that have been very tonally different than what he had been. Doing in the Wanted and Kick-Ass era, but he's turned to a different style here, and this is very sort of Back to the Future-esque with the letter showing up from the guy who went back in the past, and I dug everything about this. This has been it's been a great miniseries.
I also really like the sequence too, and this is actually something we touched on in the first issue, was sort of the technical comic book storytelling version of what to do while he fires the bullet.
Right.
You know, like we talked about how super speed is depicted. Mm-hmm. And I just, as a thing, I always appreciate that. I always like that part of comics that has to play with the depiction of time because it doesn't move.
Right.
You know, not like a moving picture. You can do that with a Jim Croce song and some slow motion, you know, if you want.
Sure.
But here you have to come up with something smart to sort of depict that, and the scene where he fires the bullet, and there's a whole scene that takes place between the time that the bullet comes out of the gun, you know, and the person is shot. I really liked that.
Yes.
I was like, oh wow, we're still within this microsecond,
bullet
which
time.
It's so cool.
So this was the story of a bunch of kids from Detroit who stumbled upon pharmaceutical speed powers, basically. They take pills and they could move really fast, and it was really good. And the Duncan Fregredo art was wonderful. Really, if this is the way Mark Miller's going, I'm more than happy to be on board.
Yeah, he was a guy who I avoided.
Yeah,
for a time, I was like, you know, he's whatever he's doing, it's not my thing. And now he's a guy like, oh, this I'm excited to see more.
Yep.
And it's and also it's all very different. I mean, this is very different from Starlight. It's very different than Jupiter Rising. Like, it's like, I was trying to think of somebody else who sort of has that kind of range where he's doing all sorts of different stories. Like Jason Aaron, I guess, would be another one.
But I would put this tonally similar to Starlight. Mm-hmm. It's violent, but it's ultimately uplifting. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a happy ending for everybody involved in both those stories.
And, yeah, that's. Not, I don't know. That's tonally. That's. I can't think of
it. It's tonally much similar than you. Than you'd
structurally.
Put, than you'd put those other stories you did. You know, the evil Batman story and the.
Jesus Christ, as a human.
I don't even want to remember those names. This is
Chosen. I read the first Trouble. You remember Trouble?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. There was some.
But this was a fun time travel story, speedster story. This is sort of back to Mark Miller's old vein of coming up under Grant Morrison of looking at these superpowers from a scientific angle. And
reminds me that the first time that I ever read Mark Miller was doing fill-in issues on The Flash.
Yes.
I think it was the Black Flash story in the middle of Wade's run.
That's probably where most people.
And this is very like that. And the thing is, like, Flash has always had that thing where, you know, a super speed story is a time travel story. Mm-hmm. It's all, you know, theory of relativity, blah, blah, blah. I say that because I don't understand it. I'm not smart enough to expound on it. But basically, like, the faster you're moving, you are moving in time. And so but with this, he's just saying, yeah, they go hand in hand. Which is really cool. I love that stuff.
Yeah, and I liked that there's basically two twists here, and I liked them both. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Agree. So, I realized we actually haven't talked about Ultimate Spider-Man in a while, which I think that this is going to matter to the this story is going to come together in a big way. Mm-hmm. So we should be keeping up on him a little bit for the folks at home. But a main point being, I still really like this book,
yes.
And I really like this character, and I'm enjoying the last couple of issues as we make progress in Miles' personal life.
When I finished reading this issue, I thought to myself, I'm going to be really bummed when this ends because I really like this little pocket world that's gotten smaller and smaller, the ultimate world that they created in 2000. And Brian Bendis has been writing for 15 years.
Yeah.
But David Marquez, when he first came on this book, I was missing La Fuente and I was missing all those other artists. But he has really made this particular story, this particular character, his own. And this is a gorgeous issue. This is a really gorgeous issue. And
yeah, I've enjoyed the sort of admittedly melodramatic sort of backstory to the father. Mm-hmm. And why all that happened, and then the sort of looming threat in the background of his girlfriend's dad.
This is like the ultimate bad meeting with your girlfriend's parents, right? When they're Hydra agents.
What's his deal again? He's somebody?
They're Hydra.
Oh, he's Hydra. But I thought he was, like, they found out he was a supervillain or something we'd had revealed, like, before.
I don't remember that.
Like, specifically.
I just thought.
Maybe they're just Hydra.
Her dad, her parents are Hydra. So it makes it. Remember, we did talk about this when Miles decided to reveal his identity to his girlfriend, and we talked about how bad that of an idea that was. And it's really doubly bad when her parents are evil. So we got to deal with that.
I really like that last page. I like the angle a lot on the dad.
It's a great sequence.
Yep.
I like Miles. I like Genki, if that's how you say his name. Mm-hmm. And all these characters are super fun, and I don't know what's going to happen. I strongly suspect they're going to find a way to keep Miles in the new paradigm.
Oh, they're not going to get rid of this character.
So we'll have two Spider-Men.
I'm fine. I'm also fine with that.
Yeah.
I don't care. I want to keep reading his story. I don't really care so much about the stories of him, like, fitting into his new world, so I would rather they did that sort of seamlessly. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I just want to keep reading this one that's going on as it is. But here's the thing. When Peter Parker died, it was super sudden, and it felt to me like his story hadn't been told fully. Like, it was just like, no, we're done now. He's dead now. And then I was like, well, and then he brought this character in, and I was like, all right, you know what? This is fine. Like, I'm enjoying this too. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it'll just be like that.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. We'll talk about that more in a bit later on. So I was surprised to find that War Corner would show up in the Multiversity. But in the Multiversity Minutemen number one, we have the story of the Ubermensch, in which the Kryptonian or the this world's Kryptonian version ship lands in Nazi Germany and is discovered by the Nazis, and Hitler, who has been reading a Superman comic, is very excited to have his Superman
on the shitter.
Yeah. This is
the shit, or the Shitler, as it was called.
This issue drawn by Jim Lee, continuing the all-star cast of artists on this book. What did you think, Josh?
I thought that, I was like a third through it, and I was like, who's drawing this? Because I remember seeing Lee on the cover, and it just didn't occur to me that it would be Jim Lee.
Probably Stan
Lee. I was like, oh, it's Jim Lee. Okay. I guess that's fine. Like, it didn't bother me. The art was fine. I love this. Yeah. I mean, it was the most clear of all of the multiversity stories. It was the most sort of straightforward. I mean, it's basically the Elseworld story, but this is one of my favorite Elseworld stories in terms of like what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoy, like, I just ponder about the Nazi Batman. Like, what's that guy like? Like you don't want him on that side. what caused him to be that? And so is he Nazi because those are the values he was brought up with?
Well, yeah, they won the war.
Right, but so are we saying that he's inherently going to be a super weapon for whatever value system he was brought up with instead of being inherently good inside?
Well, it's all relative,
they talk
right?
about that, too, right. Well, yeah. Sort of. There's a really interesting bit in here where they sort of talk about, like, they split up Nazism, I guess, mm-hmm. in keeping, like, their government is a certain way. But they sort of issue the genocide was probably a bad idea.
Well, so just for context, if you're not reading it, it starts with, you know, obviously during the war when they discover the baby with Hitler. But then it jumps to the present, in which, you know, he's all grown up. He's not Superman. He's Ubermensch or something. Overman. He's Overman.
Uberman.
And then he's got his own Justice League of Nazi, versions of the heroes you know today. Living in America, which has been taken over, and so you're dealing with the present day, and he's not Overman. Superman is not comfortable with the ethnic cleansing of the war, but does seem to espouse the totalitarian regime aspects of it.
I like that
they called the Watchtower the Eagle's Nest.
Yeah, I did too. That was a nice little virtuous godinism.
But I like this.
It's really disturbing kind of story. Like, there's just Superman with the swastika in the background.
Did you clench your fist when the Nazis bazooka'd the Lincoln Memorial?
Yeah, I didn't like that. I love Uncle Sam. Yeah. I don't get him enough. I love his like goofy folksy talk. he's a little bit like, I'm like, that's Abraham Lincoln.
Well, yeah. Like, why don't we have an Uncle Sam movie starring Sam Elliott?
Because we've all seen him without his mustache now, and it's terrifying. Somebody out there wrote that he looks like a Dr. Seuss character with his pointy lip, and he does, and I can't not see it. I need him to grow that mustache back.
Right now.
Fucking idiot.
Yeah. But anyway, I think he'd be great. Mostly because he talks kind of like the character that he plays on Parks and Recreation. Mm-hmm. And I that character makes me laugh so much. But I thought this is great with the resistance team of people who... You know, like from that whole era of the Uncle Sam characters, the Phantom Lady and those people, the Freedom Fighters. Mm-hmm. I like tying that bit in.
I just want to read this. Like, I feel like, all right, that was a great first issue, but we're not going to do more.
That's the sad thing about this particular book is that you meet these worlds and these interesting characters, and you may most likely never see them again.
I'll tell you what a hard sell is. Nazi Superman, the ongoing series.
That ends up on Fox News.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
There's no way that doesn't.
I'm telling you something. I'm reading that book.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm totally reading that book.
I'm listening to the Sam Elliott audio version.
And then he washed his cape. It's great. It was. I don't want to say it was my favorite, but it was sort of the most poppy pleasing sort of version of those. There was the most. It was the most easily digestible one.
This I've been enjoying the hell out of this series.
Yes. Yeah. They've been
this
good.
This series has been awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it continues.
Because I can't not check in on the kitchen. Are you reading this?
No,
I need to know.
No.
So you never went back?
I had 19 books as it was. I can't be adding new books.
All right. So if you've been listening, then you know what it is. So the kitchen is a story. It's like 70s New York City. Three ladies who are girlfriends.
Why would
wives.
I have done this? Because you've been saying how not good it's been.
But that I can't look away.
Right, but I wouldn't join
okay,
in.
Okay, so here's
you.
The deal. This issue was a little better. This with number four, like they've set things up and like the husbands are coming back from jail, which sets up a really interesting dynamic because they don't want it to go back to the way it
well,
was.
It's like the war.
And then the war, like the war is starting. There's like a gangland hit on somebody. Like an Italian sort of head guy gets killed. Thanks to a double cross from one of the Orthodox Jewish gangsters. Mm-hmm. I love this stuff. Not, you know, that takes place outside a delicatessen, you know, in the middle of the city, and they're talking business, and you could, and when he's killed, and I don't know. This one was a better issue. I definitely liked the direction that it was going now that it's set up a little bit. And I think that once they understand their characters and their world a little better, they might start to get away from some of the cliche that I think was bothering me.
How is the art?
It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not great. I wish I could say it was, but it's, I don't know. It looks like a Vertigo book from the 90s.
Mm.
Like one of those. It's Ming Doyle, who's a fine artist, but it reminds me of sort of an art style from a different time.
Right.
Which isn't necessarily bad, but it does the trick, though. I know who all the characters are, which is actually quite a big deal, given that there's no costumes or anything.
That's good. That's the most important thing. Yeah. All right. Well, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon if you want to help the show out. That's where you go to make your Amazon purchases. You click that link. You make your purchase. We get a little piece of Amazon's pie when from that sale, and that helps keep the show going. And also, a great way to help the show is to go to ifanboy.com/registration. That's where you become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. And that helps the show directly, helps keep the server fees paid and all the costs that are associated with the show. And we appreciate everyone who does that very much. Now, I liked with Uncanny X-Men 31, which was the wrap-up. Are you still reading this book, or is it just me?
No. I think I read the first.
This has been a really great companion book to all new X-Men, which are you not also reading? Or you?
I am reading that. That one I'm still reading.
This storyline has been that they had discovered a mutant that Charles Xavier had found as a young man who was basically the most powerful mutant ever, and so he put all these psychic blocks in the kid's head to make him not know he was a mutant, and you know they broke, and he got out, and he basically controls matter, and he can blow everything up, and so they've been dealing with that. And this issue, they're basically throwing time travel to the wind. You know, the whole point of the all new X-Men book has been to bring back the original X-Men. So in this issue, that one of the time traveling characters, there's a whole bunch of new characters in this book. It's all about these new mutants that they created. She can go back in time. So she goes back in time and grabs the younger Xavier and brings him to the present. And I was like, well, now everyone's here. It's just, they're just saying, fuck it. We're just going to go for it. And, this is actually a really great wrap up to the story in which, a lot of people have to do some things they don't want to do in order to keep the world from dying. And a lot of things, but a lot of hard choices made. And one of those great scenes where everything goes wrong, people die, like Cyclops, big people get killed, and then time travel wipes it out the next sequence. And it was, I really liked it. This has been a great storyline, and Chris Bochco has been drawing the hell out of it.
As he's wont to do.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention Miss Marvel 12, which was a really fun one-shot story in which Loki is sent by Odin to Earth because there's this character, the Inventor. We've mentioned him earlier. He was the one that's been causing problems for Miss Marvel. He has the capacity to blow a hole in reality between Midgard and Asgard, so they want to stop him, so they send Loki down. And if you recall, Loki's been de-aged into sort of a movie version of himself. And so he shows up in Jersey City to find this character, and he walks around dressed like an Asgardian, and there's lots of funny Brooklyn hipster gentrification jokes in this issue as they see they're going to be overrun by dudes dressed as Vikings pretty soon because they're sure that's the latest trend in Brooklyn. And really fun one-shot in which Loki ends up at the school dance, puts the truth serum in the punch, and as you might imagine, a truth serum at a high school dance is probably a really bad thing. So... really fun one-shot story. If you, much like I mentioned Lazarus, if you haven't read Ms. Marvel, and you're thinking about picking it up, this is a great issue to try out. It's just a one and done story. You don't need to know what's come before. You get a great sense of the characters. You get a great sense of the art style. And it's really fun. Really, really fun issue.
All right. Over at the Dark Horse, I noticed that there was a new series, 8. I don't know how to say it's 8, but instead of a G, it's a it's an 8, the numeral 8, as evidenced by the movie 7 in 1995, which is not notable in itself at all. But it was written, at least conceived, but scripted by somebody else and drawn by Rafael Albuquerque.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. He wrote and drew this story. Which is very good looking. A man finds himself stranded and out of time, and he's captured by a group of Mad Max looking punks, and then he comes out, and there's a big city. That's what I got from it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you like it?
Well, what I said is that it looked really good, and then I explained a few things to you about what I got out of it.
Then no.
No,
you weren't engaged.
It felt super cliched, but looked better than most things that are super cliched.
Mm-hmm.
Felt very like cyberpunky future where things are, you know, kind of.
There's
rough.
A lot of books like that, and
yeah,
it's hard. Like I keep wanting to try new things, but you know they've got to be really good if they're going to be retreading the same ground, unless they're featuring characters that I
well. Here's the deal: is that. Here's the deal is that I don't know what the hook is.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it, and listen, I read a lot of books. It's very possible that I missed the thing in there, but coming out of it, like I got to the end and I was like, I don't know what the hook is. I think it's time travel, but and then the 8 is supposed to represent infinity, mm-hmm. I think, which is a little bit clever. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to read Black Science.
Right.
Or something, you know, or like Wasteland, or like, you know, I'm not gonna, but like it's like those books right. where, you know, oh they have ragged T-shirts and mohawks,
like, right.
It's a tough girl, and I don't know what the hook is supposed to be.
It's a Mad Max variation.
It's a great looking book though. There's a Nazi. There's a guy. He's the SS.
Hmm.
So that's nice.
There's always.
So I guess there's that trope in there too, but. It's really good looking. Maybe I'll read another one and see if that solidifies for me at all. They went with like a dual color thing. Like mm-hmm. It's just sort of bluish and orangish.
Right.
Instead of the full. What would that be called? Biochromat? Not bio,
like,
but.
Well, it's like a wash, a color wash on it?
No, but there's two colors basically. Yeah. So instead of monochromatic, there's two of them.
Two chromatic.
Yeah, but there's like the you know, orange and blue, which are. Complimentary. That's basically. It changes. Then there's a little bit of red, but it looks it's very nice looking.
I meant to mention Silver Surfer 8 last time. I don't think I did. Silver Surfer 9 continues the delightful adventures of Silver Surfer and Don Greenwood, his human sidekick. And in the last issue, they stumbled upon a planet. I thought this was very clever, populated entirely by people who survived the Galactus attacks. So the last member of their race. So it's a whole planet of people, of aliens who are the last of their kind. And mm-hmm. So whenever one dies, that's the end of their race. And they have a very sad ceremony. So when Silver Surfer shows up, they obviously quite rightly freak out. And in this issue, we have two things that happen. One, Dawn Greenwood finds out that her crush, the Silver Surfer, is responsible for the death of billions of people. Because back when he was Galactus's herald, he brought Galactus to those planets. So she doesn't deal with that very well. And also, we actually have Galactus show up, as was teased in the last issue. And I haven't read a Galactus story in a while. And so this was fun to see him deal with Silver Surfer and also to see him drawn by Mike Allred because his style is perfectly suited for these kind of stories. And I like the concept. At one point, Silver Surfer surfs a moon. He decides he's going to take out Galactus, so he gets on a moon and surfs it into Galactus's head.
Obviously.
And it's been fun. This has been a really great series. I like the appearance of Galactus, and I like that now Don Greenwood and Silver Surfer had, to this point, had sort of a fairy tale screwball romance going on, and now their first major stumbling block is oh, but at one point I caused lots of people to die. So how do you deal with that in your relationship?
It's tough. It's a big matzo ball.
It's tough. It's a big elephant in the room.
Yeah, yeah, totally. This week, in terms of, we're going to talk about quirky Marvel books.
Mm-hmm.
To really just drill it down to its completely absurd essence. She-Hulk number 12, which is the last of the lovely Charles Soule. Is it Javier Rodriguez?
It's been a bunch of
Pulido, Javier Pulido.
It's been a couple. He's been the main artist, but there's been a couple of artists.
Yeah, but for the most part. So this is the last issue. We wrap everything up. And I guess the big twist is that the bad guy was a guy that we thought was a good guy.
Nightwatch,
who had like...
He's the anti-Sentry.
He'd used the energy of a town that was murdered to revert the world to a reality in which he was a good guy and not a bad guy.
He murdered the people to do that.
Yes. And then in that time, he was a good guy. And he did a lot of good, and he helped a lot of people, and he was philanthropic. It was kind of strange.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
But it was interesting.
I didn't love it, but I did like a couple of things about it. It might have been my least favorite issue of the series.
I could see that, but I also liked it was a thing that I'm still thinking about, which is a good sign.
Well, what I liked, was the look back at the sort of Roger Stern, Sal Buscema era Avengers with Dr. Druid and Tigra and She-Hulk and Monica Rambeau, Captain Marvel. Although I don't know why Dr. Druid was helping the bad guys.
Well, was he mind controlled?
I don't know. Maybe at one point he was bad. I'm not a Dr. Druid expert. I don't claim to be.
No, me neither.
But I did like the sort of reverse centurying story. Is basically this guy made everybody believe he'd always been around as a good guy and changed everyone's reality. And I
little touch of identity crisis.
Yeah, so that was fun. But overall, it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. Like the bits at the end where they're all like hanging around in the office and they've got their personalities and Howard the Duck shows up. I'm like, I'm going to miss that part.
Well,
I like that part.
The good news is...
And Howard the Duck shows up.
Is that Charles Soule wrote in the afterword that he's writing 15 Marvel books. I think it's 15, right? Mm-hmm. 25? Something like that.
40.
But he says, I'm sneaking Jen and the gang into as many comics as I can. This series may be ending, but believe me, you'll see these folks again soon.
Yeah.
He likes these characters.
Clearly.
So, yeah.
Fun book, different book, you know.
Nice little 12-issue run. If you like quirky, offbeat Marvel stories, this is a great book for you. There'll probably be a collection of the 12, or maybe two collections of six, but it's super fun overall.
Yep. Worth your time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So those are the comics we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com, and you can find the post for this show, and you can talk about other books or these books, or talk about whatever you want this week at fanboy.com. And so right before we started getting ready to record, Josh, we were like, so I guess we'll just talk about comics. Nothing's going on. And then we decided to talk about Aquaman. This is
Khaleesi. There is no word in Dothraki for Aquaman.
This is the segment I like to call the Tom Cater's Memorial Movie Stills segment.
Aw. you're right. Cater's oh, my God, we're doing it.
Used to hate whenever iFanboy would do a whole post on a movie still. And he was actually making fun of it on Twitter again. But that's what we'll call the segment, the Tom Cage Memorial Movie Still segment. And so we had our first look at Aquaman.
He's not dead, right?
I don't think he's dead. But so late last night, Zack Snyder tweeted out a photo of Jason Momoa from Game of Thrones in his Aquaman costume.
And Conan. Forget Conan. Game of Thrones.
And under the title, Unite the Seven. And what do you think, Josh?
I mean, I don't hate it from the standpoint of I'm looking at that image and I go, well, that fits in with everything else they do. Mm-hmm. And the uniform, if you look at it, makes sense. It looks like 90s Aquaman, who I
like the 90s outfit.
So that's fair. I don't really. Here's the thing: is that Aquaman to me. His personality has never really matched what he looks like.
Right.
And I think that, like, his pretty boy blonde...
his Aryan looks?
Yeah. Don't match the personality that he was supposed to have. So I don't mind that he looks very different from that. So in that way, like, you know, it's not very far from that Aquaman. That being said, I just don't like the aesthetic of these things altogether. Everything is gray. Mm-hmm. Everything is, like, I love that. When I see Aquaman, I think orange. I just do. You know what I mean?
Well, you can see hints of gold in the armor. And in the comics now, he wears gold instead of orange. But I do like that they're incorporating all of Jason Momoa's real tattoo work. And I like that he looks exotic and foreign, which was always the weird thing to me, that the Atlanteans would look just like everybody on the surface. Mm-hmm. And I like that he looks like, if that guy's standing next to Superman, he's going to look different. And not just because he's darker skin, but just he's got a different feel to his appearance. He's not just wearing a shirt and pants. He's got armor and tattoos everywhere and crazy long hair and beard. So I think that's a great visual distinction for him.
Yeah, he's foreign.
Yes.
From the other things that we're going to see. Maybe it doesn't make sense that he's a little darker since they're under the sea and get no sunlight.
Right.
So that's just, you know, maybe that's why he's so pale. I always thought, was there a time when he was, like, considered to be sound kind of Russian? That was a thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was in year one.
Yeah, year one, by the way, by Mark Waid and Barry Kitson, is my favorite Aquaman depiction.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit in the Throne of Atlantis podcast that I did with Paul Orion, is that it always annoyed me that in every other appearance by him, they don't ever make any effort to make him foreign. Mm-hmm. And so in that book, he actually had him with an accent, which I thought, of course, he should have an accent.
And no one could hear him.
Right, and no one can hear him.
Because sound carries different underwater, so he would be very quiet, which I loved. And they actually visually did that, like his letters and his word balloons were smaller. And everybody was like, what? Which I dug. And then I really liked the 90s version where he was just tortured because everybody in his life had gone or died and he lost his arm. And, you know, that, like, I like angry Aquaman as a thing. I think that's funny because it seems so antithetical to the Super Friends version that people think of.
Right.
So it's fun. Like, it's one of those things where going dark with it, I don't think feels cliched.
Right.
Because nobody knows anything about Aquaman, really.
It's true. He's a blank slate.
Bit of, you know, like every sort of story about him is going to be different than the other. I think Peter David did a run, and
that was
Kurt Busiek did a run.
Peter David run was the only real run you need to read.
Right, exactly. But there's lots of different versions of him. There's Grant Morrison's take on the character, and these are all relatively modern, in the last 20 years or so. So I don't think that I could look at the picture of Jason Momoa and go, "Well, that's wrong," because there isn't a wrong.
Right,
like, do whatever you want with him. It doesn't really matter. So again, there's not a gigantic Aquaman fan base that's going to be upset by it. Like, do what you want with him. Make him work. You know, not like Hawkeye. When they screwed with him. No, it's exactly like Hawkeye. There's like six people who care about Hawkeye, so why not do whatever you need to have him fit in, I guess.
Well, I think it's interesting.
Do I think that this is going to be very good? No, I don't. It just looks like it looks like it's going to be no fun of any kind.
Right. Can't have fun. It's very serious business, Josh.
Well, you know, that's how they're going to counter program to Marvel, then good luck with that.
I think it's interesting. Look, I think we'll be more interesting will be to see what the Flash and those characters, Green Lantern, look like.
I think it's funny that somewhere in a meeting, basically they said, we have to get people to take Aquaman seriously. And that sentence is flawed. just right away. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Well, Jason Momoa staring at you with those eyes is one way to do it.
Yeah, it's true. I still, to this day, pretty much on a daily basis, will look at something and go, no. I can't not do it. Crown fucking. It doesn't...
It would be awesome if that's how he talks in the movie.
I assume that's what he really talks like, right?
Yes.
No. He wasn't even in the show that long, and that was like 4 seasons ago.
And that's how great the character is.
He's the stallion who mounts the world.
And that's how great of a presence he was on screen.
It's true.
He's got a screen presence. So he's
absolutely.
We're not talking a minor casting job here. Conan did pretty terribly, but he's got a presence. So we'll see how it goes.
They just need to harness that presence.
Yes. Harness it and mount the world.
Mount the world.
Let's do a couple emails first before we get to those. Quick apology to Wes from Minnesota, who wrote us last week with the problem with texting. Do you remember that, Josh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His name is Wes. We called him Paul throughout the segment.
Sounds like a text error to me.
It was because his final line of his email mentioned Paul, and we just took it as a sign off in the chaos of doing the show.
Ah,
so
Okay, that's
so,
fair.
Wes, apologies.
Now remind me, who's Paul? Who's this Paul guy? Do we?
He's your son.
Ah, be quiet.
So the Gary! The first email. Oh God, I love that movie.
Anybody know what that one is?
The first email is from someone whose name is withheld by request, and he writes and says, "Although I wasn't a writer or artist, I always wanted to work in the comic business. I managed to work for a number of years as one of those behind the scenes guys. Even though I didn't get paid a lot, I loved my job and most of my coworkers. Like a lot of people, I was let go when the economy tanked. A handful of my colleagues managed to get jobs in the biz again. Many of us did not. One of the big independent publishers offered me a work-for-hire contract that, when I considered the amount of work versus the pay, would have been less than minimum wage. I got burnt out and do something else now. I listen to podcasts and read websites and try to keep up with what's going on. The history of behind-the-scenes comics people isn't pleasant. You read about folks who spend their lives doing it and then are broke in their old age. It's tough to get a position because there are a lot of nepotism and always a batch of fresh young adults who are willing to work in comics for very little money. But I'll admit, having a grown-up job is boring and I miss being excited about what I'm doing. Any advice?"
Are we doing this?
Yeah. I mean, I just read it.
Okay. This is a great email.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really great email. I'm trying to figure out if I know who it is, but I don't.
It's interesting because I actually just had this conversation with someone who I work with now professionally, who used to work at one of the big two companies. And we were illuminating my other colleague about how
it
behind
is.
The scenes of the comic industry really is. As he said in his email, it can be really great. You get really excited about it if you love the comics. You work with great people for $25,000 a year.
And that can only last so long, is I think the way it is. I think that, I mean, if you look at Connor and I, you know, we worked doing this full time, talking about comics, doing all this stuff. And I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really was
the most rewarding professional experience.
Absolutely. I met the best people I've ever met. I still, to this day, comics professionals are my favorite people in the world. They just, there's something about that group of people who were like, they took the thing they were doing seriously. They got involved with it. They have a kind of sensibility, a kind of sense of humor. Like, they're my favorite people in the world. On the other hand, with the exception of a select few, it's a really tough game to get along with, especially if you have other responsibilities. Like, if you want to have a family, if you want to have a regular income, if you don't want to travel to conventions every weekend for half the year, it's tough to make a go. When we stopped doing iFanboy full time, you know, Connor and I know lots of people who work in comics. I don't doubt that either of us could have found work doing it, mm-hmm. but I think that we both looked at it and went, you know, what's that going to be? What's that ultimately going
to
end up like?
My standard line to the question that I get quite often is, which is, do you miss working comics professionally? And we didn't work at a publisher, but we worked at comics professionally. We were comics media people professionally.
And we did it full time, and we worked with the publishers every single day. So
but the question, you know, I get asked, my answer is always, I miss it, but I also like having a retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like having a savings account, which is something that was basically impossible at the time. And it's
which
just,
isn't
it's
the case for everyone.
No, people can do very well in comics. Executives obviously do very well. And we're not even talking about creators. We're talking about the people who work behind the scenes. But for the most part, as he said, as Name Withheld said in his email, there's a never-ending supply of young people who love comics and want to work in them. And this is not that different from Hollywood or any other entertainment industry, where it looks awesome from the outside, but you get behind the scenes and there's not a lot of money and you work really hard.
It's work. I mean, it's a job. Even, you know, what we were doing was work. Like, this is like, oh, I got to read more comics. And I know that sounds like, but your job's a job's a job, you know, eventually. And then the other thing is, if you're on the other side of it, you see the other side of it. And that cannot help sometimes. You know, you see that the guys and gals sort of controlling everything, maybe they don't seem to know what they're doing as much. Maybe you see the root of some of these things that you know, you didn't realize were bigger problems. And again, this isn't to say you shouldn't do it, but at the same, like, you want to think about, where does it lead? Like, if your goal is just to work in comics, then that's awesome. But if you want to, I guess, build something for yourself at least, it's really hard. Let's take an example of DC Comics. Moved their offices from New York to
lovely Burbank, California.
Burbank, California, which is lovely. I've lived there.
It's not lovely. It's the worst place on earth.
I liked where I lived. Now, they let a bunch of their staff go, or they said, you know, if you don't want to move, then you don't have to, and you can stay here, and that'll be the end of the job or whatever. So you've stopped working in comics. You have a very specialized skill. Where do you go?
Right.
There's two companies on the East Coast who make comics, for the most, two big companies. There's a couple of smaller ones, but really somebody with an organization, somebody with an HR department, you know, all that stuff. You're not working for DC or Marvel. What do you do? I mean, you could like maybe somewhere at Valiant. Like there's not a lot of options once it ends is what I'm saying. And it's top heavy. So all those people who are in it, like a lot of people, I know people who are editors, you know, who either got laid off or just didn't want to keep doing it anymore. And they don't have anywhere else to go in comics. There's no up
right.
to a certain extent. And that may not be important to you, but you know, some people have families. They have kids. Those kids are going to go to school. They're going to need to go to college. You're going to have real life expenses. You're going to have to have a house or something. And comics is difficult on that, except for a small group of people.
Executives, people in charge.
Yeah,
and it's hard. You have to decide. I mean, he wants no advice. He misses working in comics. He his grown up job is boring. Most people's jobs are boring and they're not excited about them.
This is the thing that I think started with our generation, has creeped into the ones that are younger, where people think that their job has to be a thing that's super fulfilling. That doesn't seem to actually work. There aren't that many jobs like that. So like eventually, you know, it's called a grown-up job for a reason. Like you have to work. Why are you working? And if you're lucky enough to get a job that gives you that too, then that's good. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that one. That's one of life's great existential things. But I will say,
what's most important to you?
It's true. You set your priorities, but having worked in comics and sort of enjoyed that social aspect of it, or I guess, or that creative aspect of it, I can confirm it's totally difficult to go back to working with regular people on a regular job. It is. I don't know an answer for that. But
some people, it's more important they get to be in that environment. So that means, you know, you accept your realities of, you know, a studio apartment or having five roommates and not having a retirement account and probably not having a family. And that's what you want to do. That's totally fine. But you have to decide what you want to do with your life.
You know, and it's the same thing with creators. I think it's really close to that. There's an inner circle, an upper echelon of people who totally can make a living. And then there's a bunch of sort of middle class, working class guys who are making a living, but I think who the bottom could drop out at any time for a lot of those people because the industry is pretty volatile. And it's the same thing with them. Like ultimately, I start looking at it and I go, well, you know, what do I want? Do I want to be a full time comic book creator or a person who works there? And how realistic is that? And the more that your responsibility mounts, the more like that seems like an awful idea. Mm-hmm. At least, you know, in terms of responsibility, the things that I have to deal with, which is really totally like sad in a way, but also, you know, it's not unheard of. It's just kind of how it works.
It's tough. It's a tough gig.
It is. It's a tough industry. It's very geographically dependent. You know, the publishers, you're not going to get to work from wherever you want. Mm-hmm. I sort of stuck my flag in that sand when I moved to New Hampshire.
Right.
Well, I guess it's not going to work. But, you know, but people do make it work. You know, I know there are retailers I know who do really well. There are people, you know, who work in the middle of those publishers and they're doing well. They've been there for a long time. They feel good about it. I can't imagine, though, for most small publishers, there isn't like you're looking over your shoulder because, well, this could be it. What else am I going to do? What am I going to do then?
Right. And we've talked about it. There's not a lot of places to go. There's basically three or four companies you can work at and people, a lot of people, you'll see them just cycle through them.
Yep.
Because there's nowhere else that's going to hire you with your specialized skills.
Stuff. Yeah. A lot of comics people end up going into publishing.
Yeah. Well, that's very similar.
Like book publishing, because they have relationships there already and things like that. I've seen that a lot, but
yeah. Tough life question. Name withheld.
Yeah. Good question though. It was interesting. I hope we didn't just bum the shit out of everyone.
Yeah. So that was a good email from Ron Richards. I mean.
Oh shit.
read the next one.
Justin says, DC and Marvel are shuffling their publication lineups after their next big event. It seems that the current trend is branching out into different IPs, which result in books that last 12 to 20 issues and are then canceled or relaunched. With this current publishing trend and adding in the new publishing lines, DC's announced there, Marvel hasn't announced their post-Civil War Secret Wars lineup, which do you think will be higher? The number of monthly books dropped by current readers or the number of monthly books added by current readers?
New readers.
Monthly books meaning habitually... Right, buy new readers. Monthly books meaning habitually buying, reading each new issue of a title. I'm guessing that their goals are to add new readers, though shifting more towards stories and not continuity may alienate current readers.
Anguish.
Anguish?
There's a lot of anguish out there because one of the things DC said is with their relaunch, their mini relaunch, is they're focusing with those particular books, and not their entire line, but that particular lineup of books that they announced. We talked about this two shows ago. Or was it last week? It was last week. Duh.
Yeah.
Those particular books are going to focus more on telling stories and worry less about the continuity. They mentioned specifically that the Justice League of America book is not really going to be worried about continuity. It's just going to tell Justice League stories. And so that's freaking people out whose whole reason for reading these stories is the continuity.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having this discussion on a comics podcasting panel at San Diego when the relaunch happened originally. People were freaking out. And the question is, what are you reading the stories for? Or is the stories are just for the continuing tapestry of the continuity? If you're reading for the continuity, then you're not too happy right now.
I think it's the same people. I don't think it changes. I think the people will grouse about the continuity thing, but they will still buy the new things. And I don't think it will go up or down.
I've actually met people here that have stopped reading books from Marvel and DC because of the less continuity.
But I feel like it will even itself out. Like there will be some new people and there will be some people who drop off and that little stream of readers will get...
I think ultimately the numbers won't change.
That's what I'm getting
much
at.
Much like, you know, DC saw the huge bump when they relaunched, but then... Eventually, then everything just settled back down pretty close to what it was before. The water finds its level kind of thing. And DC is clearly going for expanding their reader base, more books with female leads, more books with minority leads. And maybe that will bring in new readers. Or maybe it'll just please the current readers who are looking for that. I don't know. Most likely, I think the second.
Yeah, I think mostly it's going to stay about the same. And I think it's mostly going to be the same people. I think people like to grouse about it, but at the end of the day, they're going to buy the book that has Spider-Man on the cover because they like Spider-Man.
Right.
And then additionally, because so-and-so is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, you know, Brian Bendis is writing that book. I don't know. I wish they weren't doing it. Yeah, I'll take one, please. Like, it's that's what I think.
I also think that at this point, DC, there's not much DC can do to make it worse than what they've got going on, so might as well try something new.
Which they already did once, and it went badly, so...
Well, that's what I mean. They mucked up their chance to start over in a clean way. They made it worse by trying to do new stories that also featured old stories and made their whole thing a mess. So I still feel that when I read a lot of these books that reference things that happened in the past, like Batgirl this week, and it's just like, okay, just stop talking about things that happened before. But... So maybe if they're going to not focus on that stuff and just tell stories, that's a really interesting thing. I'm looking forward to reading those books, some of those books, not all of them, but some of them. So we'll see. But I think you're right, Josh. I think it's just going to even out.
See, I was right. That's how it always ends up. Great questions this week. If you want to take part in the conversation and contribute to the show, you can email us at contact@fanboy. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Tell us who you are and where you're from and try to keep it around 30 seconds. But if it's 29 seconds exactly, we're probably going to think you're spam. So that's your challenge, I suppose.
Yeah.
Where should they go?
Head over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books. And find out all of our other podcasts, just like the Aquaman Throne of Atlantis podcast I mentioned earlier. Actually, Justice League Throne of Atlantis, because can't be selling no Aquaman DVDs. So you can find those shows, all of them, at ifanboy.com. Also, follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show. And follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan and at C.S. Kilpatrick.
Hey, if you like the show, you could write a review in iTunes. Or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Pause. Help us spread the iFanboy love. I've never actually read that copy.
There you go. Think. That's some old copy.
Yeah. The Introduce Your Mom line. Can we kill that?
We can kill it. We can do whatever we want. It's a brave new world.
I know. It's true. Seriously, though, one really easy, quick way to help us is to spread the word.
Spread the
word. One way or the other. You know, that would really help. If you like the show, if you liked something we did, share it on your social media or talk to the folks at your comic shop. We always appreciate that.
And so that's This Week in Comics.
There it is. The week that was. I'm Chevy Chase and you're not.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
No.
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 This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.